Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Love Hour podcast. I am your host, Miss Kev on Stage, and I'm joined by my husband and co-host,
the Kev on Stage. And... I don't know why. I'm sorry, Dr. Lauren Fogelmercy.
I was just going to say, we have a very special guest with us here today. Her name is Lauren Fogelmercy. Everyone clap in our studio audience. It's four of us here. And two of
Everybody
us are
in the
hosts.
Studio audience works here. So.
Yeah, exactly.
clap! yeah, clap.
Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very, very excited. You guys are going to hear a little bit of the Minnesota, is it called twang?
Well, mine is actually Canadian accent. That's where I'm originally from.
You're from Canada?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I
think a lot of people from Minnesota, the accent has a little bit of hints of Canadian.
Yeah, it's very similar. I've lived in a couple places, so I think it's sort of.
I didn't even notice your accent until Melissa said it.
Oh, I hear it.
You'll hear it. It'll come out.
Out's always the word to get it. I'm very excited. If you are, I'm always excited. What's new?
Melissa only picks guests that she really loves. Let me tell you what. This is the first time I actually heard Melissa on a call with a guest. We were going to Whole Foods to get organic egg whites for your boy. You see the weight loss. And Melissa and Dr. Lauren, Melissa was like, oh, I'm so excited. Oh, yeah. And I was like, this is what it must be like.
Yeah,
Melissa just loves all her guests.
I do genuinely love all of my guests. If you're new here to the podcast, first of all, thank you so much for listening and joining with us today. The Love Hour podcast is a place where we talk about love, life, and the pursuit of happiness. We are not experts, but we bring experts on to help us navigate life and love, because we're a real life couple with real life issues, and y'all be real life people, real life issues as well. And so we just like to share some of our experiences. And today we are going to be talking about John Gottman's Four Horsemen. What are they called?
The Four Horsemen of the Relationship Apocalypse.
The Relationship Apocalypse. So
that
I call
like
them
impending doom.
The Four.
It's exactly what it is.
And if you're unfamiliar, I'm always like, I do end up like researching a lot of things, but I'm like never an expert on any one thing. I just know a little bit about a lot of things in this field. And I was really searching out someone who I felt would be an expert in Gottman. And I found Lauren on Instagram by her post. Listen, y'all, for y'all people that are like experts, use hashtags. They work. This is how I find my guests. I have an idea or a topic. I search the podcast or that hashtag. I look at your work on your Instagram. Let your Instagram, I don't know how we got here, but I'm gonna finish this thought, okay? Mm-hmm. Let your Instagram be your resume. Nowadays, people don't have business cards. I'm not going to websites because that's not a place that you can readily find someone. So your Instagram becomes your resume, a place of information that houses who you are and what you're capable of. So when you use those hashtags, let it show that you know what you're talking about. Like, have examples of you talking and posts and all of. No, it's not in trouble. I'm actually.
Even if you're a hair braider, Melissa found her hair braider using.
I use hashtags all of the time. They work. Don't let people tell you they don't work. What happens though is if I find the hashtag, find your page, and then you have your kids and your dog and your car, why'd you hashtag that? Our confusion. Okay, I'm done here. That was just free game to help y'all. But I literally was finding or researching Gottman on Instagram, finding someone who can talk to us about this topic. And that's how I found Lauren. And honestly, that's how, again, I find a lot of my guests. And I follow, and then I'd be searching you out and looking at what you post and looking at your story, making sure you know what you're talking about. And then we reached out. I reached out to Lauren a while ago, actually, to be a guest on the podcast. And now here we are. So today, again, we are going to be talking about Gottman. I'm really excited about this topic because he can predict divorce within like an 80-something percent.
90 to 94%.
Oh, 90 I didn't know 94? It was that high.
I didn't realize it was that high either.
With about, I think it's about 10 to 15 minutes of watching a couple. It's unreal. Yeah, unreal.
So he sees y'all, a couple talking, he's like, nope, y'all out of here.
He can tell.
And even now, if they're not arguing?
Even, well, yeah, it might not look like an argument, but just sort of the interaction and the dynamics between them, he can tell. Now, that is if they continue on that path.
Right.
Okay,
so
got it.
So you can, you know, intervene, you can do
so
some
So like
work.
Untreated,
yes.
It'll end in divorce if it continues.
Likely. Yeah.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was that. I thought it was like 87%.
Yeah, it's like 90 to 94%.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Okay, so let's dive right in.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you go through and explain to us each of those, the horsemen?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Wait, did we explain who she is?
Oh, no. Chatty, let you introduce yourself. Good call, Kim.
This is ready to get to the apocalypse right now.
Let's just talk about Gottman.
Yeah. I got cans of beans in my bunker.
Matter. Yeah, all that doesn't matter. So tell us first who you are, your credentials, and also let me know. I said this with Emily, and I actually usually have this conversation before we actually go live, but somehow we did it with Emily on the podcast. If you have, listen, if you paid for a degree to put letters in front of your name or after your name, respect. Okay, so if you want to be doctor, we will call you doctor on today.
I'm all right with Lauren.
Okay.
Why does nobody who becomes doctor want to go by doctor? Do you understand? No. If I was a doctor, you wouldn't even be able to say my last name? Just call me doctor. Don't say no. Don't disrespect.
I think it was like the first year that I had a doctorate, and I was like, it's doctor.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I was just like, all right.
You earned it, Dr. Lauren Fogelmercy.
I am doctor. Yeah, I am.
What's funny is when I had the OBGYNs on as well, practicing, it was really important to me get practicing doctors. Like literally, Dr. Jessica Shepherd, I had probably three calls with her that needed to be rescheduled because she was in surgery. Mm-hmm. Okay. She's like legit. Mm-hmm. And was still like, no, Jessica's fine. I'm like, ma'am, you're operating on people yesterday. I'm calling you doctor.
I find a gender difference here.
Mm.
And I don't know, that's not going to like, you know, reflect everybody's experience, but there are a lot of women who tend to be, you know, more casual. There's also a lot of women, and I think there's research to support this, that are not called doctor versus their male counterparts who are automatically referenced as doctor.
Now that is a good point, and that is probably 100% true. Mm-hmm. Patriarchy always at the root of our problems.
Yes. That's right.
Well, Chad, I'm finna call you doctor today.
I bet you
today.
If you booked four men doctors, it'd be Dr. Man.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Even on freaking Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan. He didn't just go by Manhattan.
Right.
And he was a superhero. He wasn't even a real doctor.
Funny. Yeah. Well, yeah. Dr. Lauren, we gonna allow you the space to introduce yourself.
So, Dr. Lauren Fogelmercy. So, just gonna throw that in. And so, I have a doctorate in psychology, and I specialize in sex therapy and relationships. And so, that's what I'm doing. I work up in Minnesota, and I've been studying the Gottman method, which is they call the folks who are practicing the research based Gottman couples therapy. I've been studying that for probably 5 or 6 years, and currently on a track to become a certified Gottman therapist. Mm-hmm. So I'm just in the sort of final stages of getting certified. So that's my background. And so I am not Gottman, and I don't know all the things, but I know a lot of the things, and I'll try to impart some of that here today.
Oh, listen, it is that. All the things.
I know. This podcast is all the things.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
Okay.
All the tings if you're Jamaican.
Yeah.
You should make it for the Caribbean audience.
I'm not going to do that. It's cultural appropriation. okay, so can you go through and share with us what those four indicators are?
Yeah. So just for folks who don't know like what Gottman means, mm-hmm. and what that is. So Dr. John Gottman and his wife, Dr. Julie Schwartz Gottman, are I think John was named like one of the top 10 most influential therapists, maybe of all time, of the 21st century, mm-hmm. something like this. Wow. But he and his wife, they've been doing research with couples for over 40 years. And so what they found is that repeatedly over time, they were seeing certain patterns and trends, things that they could start to, you know, kind of package together and say, this is what that is, this is what that is. So there were four things, and he took this, it's a biblical reference to the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which was a sign of the end of times.
Yeah.
And so he kind of noticed that there were some four things, interaction patterns that couples would do, that if they're doing that, you know, continuously, that that would sign the end of the relationship, and specifically, you know, towards divorce. So so there's four of them. So the first one is criticism. And this is one that's really common. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to caveat, just because you criticize once sure. in a while does not mean you're going to get a divorce right now. It just means that that's something that you might want to pay attention to, and it might be something that you want to learn the antidote to and try a different way to do that.
Is this in general, like, is this like relationship criticism, or like, I'm critical of everything you do?
This is within the relationship, and it could be about things related to the relationship or just mm-hmm. towards your partner, you know, as in a general. Whole. So if you're critical, criticism means that you're kind of going after them as a person.
Right.
So like there's something wrong with you, the way you do things, you know, it's kind of coming at them and going after
them. As opposed to I don't like the way you cook this, or I don't like this shirt. It's like right. you as a person are right. like, I don't like something about you.
Right. So then people are like, well, what am I supposed to do when I have something that I don't like? That's a complaint.
Right.
That is different than criticism.
Yeah.
And here's the difference. So complaint is, I don't like this thing, mm-hmm. a behavior or something. Loaf. Yeah. Something separate from who you are as an individual.
I made chicken meatloaf. That's what he was talking.
You. Yeah. The whole you. The children. We had a whole meeting about it. We were like, look, we can do a lot. You know, turkey.
We're going to talk about contempt in a minute.
Okay. Definitely. Chicken meatloaf is contempt. There's four horsemen of the meatloaf apocalypse. We can take beef, pork, veal, but chicken, the children and I will not stand for it.
Before I let you finish down criticism, we were actually just talking about Kevin losing 11 pounds, and he was talking about his love language being that of words of affirmation. And one thing I want to tell you is that in the new year, one of the things that's going to be really important for you to get on your journey to a healthy life is affirming yourself. You always want to go through life running toward, we talked about this, running towards something positive versus running from something negative. So always be looking for a way to encourage yourself to do better instead of criticizing yourself into doing better, because that won't last. And one way that you can do that is through OpenFit. OpenFit has changed the way I work out, and you can use my code LOVE. You can join me on a fitness journey personalized just for you. Right now, my listeners will get a 14-day free trial membership to OpenFit when you text LOVE, that's L-O-V-E, to 50-50-50. Try it for free or your money back. It's entirely risk-free, so what do you have to lose except the weight? You will get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts, and nutrition guide. And Kevin was just mentioning that nutrition has been his biggest asset and help in your weight loss journey.
Yes. And the OpenFit plan has completely helped me in everything in my fitness journey, especially the nutrition part, because it's 80%.
80%
of the whole process is eating right.
Yes.
10% working out, 10% rest. And I'd be going hard on the workouts on OpenFit, but the meal plans, that's where it's at.
And it's also 100% a mind thing.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to we talked about the workout, totally free for 14 days. Did I say that? You'll get all of this totally free for 14 days. Again, just text LOVE, that's L-O-V-E, to 50-50-50. They have everything from extended bar. They have real-time workouts from certified personal trainers and everything that you need to get the most out of your at-home workout. Please make sure that you join. Get on the track to living the life that you've always imagined for yourself, and you can do that with OpenFit. Continue.
So, criticism. So there's a difference between criticism and complaint. Criticism is about more like going after or attacking your partner, whereas complaint is more like, hey, there's this thing that's bothering me that we need to talk about. So an example of that would be, you know, you leave your shoes lying about and that's bothering somebody, instead of criticism, which would be like, what's the matter with you? Like, why do you keep doing this? What is wrong with you? Why,
you're lazy.
You
know,
you're, something like, what is it about you that you can't figure out how to put them away?
Right.
Versus the complaint would be more like, you know, it really bothers me when their shoes out. I worry that someone's going to trip. I really need us to put our shoes away.
Got it.
And then that's less about the person, more about this thing. You know,
small distinction, big impact.
Big impact.
Yeah.
Big impact. Because criticism over time will create negative space in the relationship.
Makes negative sense. Space. So, what's that? Is that like in photos, negative space?
Sort of.
Okay.
the Gottmans call it the negative sentiment override, NSO. Negative sentiment override. So you got positive and negative, and it's basically like if you were to take the temperature of your relationship, is it running in a positive direction or is it running more negative? That is stuff that's going to be impacted slowly over time depending on how the two of you are interacting with each other.
To erode the relationship.
Exactly, exactly. So if you're, it's like, think of a bank account. The Gottmans also talk about this. An emotional bank account, right? So if you think of your relationship as an account, you want to put lots of deposits in there and help that grow so that, you know, if you have a deficit here or there, overall you're still, you're doing okay, you're in the green.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're letting things, you know, pile up over and over, you keep taking withdrawals, you're not adding deposits, you're in the red zone. Now when little things creep up, it has a big impact because you don't have any room to work with that.
I get that a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. It's Melissa always says things don't happen in a vacuum.
That's right.
So it always feels like a little thing pushed you over, but it was just an accumulation of little things.
Right.
Undetected.
Right.
Okay. I'm with you.
Right.
Got it.
So we want to really watch for criticism. Now, so the way to steer clear of criticism, so for each horseman, there's an antidote. The antidote for criticism is going to be using a softened or a gentle startup. And so what that means is instead of coming in with a harsh startup like you do this or you're always this, you're coming in with, you know, hey, I want to talk about something. There's something that's bothering me. And you come in using a more gentle approach. And that's going to be a lot better for the dynamic, the relationship, and likely, you know, feeling more respected.
Got it.
So I have a question. A lot of times, and maybe it's the method of the person offering the criticism or complaint, but do you ever find that the person on the receiving end, it doesn't matter if you actually did phrase this as a complaint and not a criticism, that they still feel attacked and defensive?
Yes.
So how do you navigate those type of dynamics?
Well, let's talk about defensiveness because that's one of the horsemen. Okay. And then let's talk about the antidote to that.
Okay.
And there's sort of two parts to that. One is if you're the defensive one, how to get that in check and what to do. But also if you're on the receiving end of something that's, you know, getting someone that's getting defensive, you know, what are some things that you can do about that? So defensiveness is another horseman. It's basically when you feel like you're being attacked. And it often is a response to criticism. But like you said, sometimes it can be a response to a complaint. Someone could just be naturally on the defensive or, you know, it's maybe triggering some stuff from the past and that's where we're going. So defensiveness is usually feel like you have to be on the defense and you're feeling attacked. So what happens though is that means that you're not really present for the conversation and you're not hearing, like if you're the defensive one and your partner's saying, hey, this bothers me, can we talk about this? And you're going into the defensive mode, you're not really listening then. And then it's becoming more about you instead of the person who is bringing up a complaint and you're not hearing them anymore.
Absolutely.
And so, and that's not fair. You know, you want to bring up something and now you're making it about you and you're going into your own stuff. So the antidote for defensiveness is going to be taking responsibility. And people struggle with this because they're like, well, I have no responsibility here. I didn't do anything. I'm completely innocent.
Yeah.
But in relationships, we want to preserve the relationship and we want to keep it on the positive. And so if there's any part of what your partner is saying to you that you could say, hey, there's some truth here, or yeah, you're right, I left my shoes there and I know that bothers you and I wasn't thinking, sorry about that,
man,
let me go.
Dr. Lauren Focal Mercy, it is tough. I've been working on it and I realize, and this partly is probably my ego not even probably. It is really sometimes difficult to utter those words, mm-hmm. but it is so helpful to the relationship. I think we had one of these conversations last week, Liz. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was, but I remember myself saying, like, have you seen the movie Hancock?
No.
Okay,
no.
So Will Smith's in it. I always tell my brother-in-law, Greg, he's Hancock. Because Grant, he was just like a jerk and shady and super muscular and handsome, good at sports, went to Savannah State, all this stuff. And it was really hard for Hancock to say good job because he had to work with the police and he's like, good job. Mm-hmm. Like, it always felt like it was really hard for him to do that. So I always mess with Greg about that. But sometimes in relationships, we're like that. Like, it's very hard to admit our fault, you know. And I remember telling Melissa, like, it's hard to see yourself doing wrong.
Yeah.
Right? So I had to say, I can see how my action was, like, could be perceived as that. That was not my intention. Right. But it takes a lot of self-awareness and, like, ownership. And I think it's helpful when you have a loving relationship. But I can see if you're not, like, if you're beefing, I could be like, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. Even if I am wrong, she be tripping too. And because she don't ever do it, so I'm not going to do it.
That's what John Gottman calls it, like, righteous indignation, where we go and we're like, I have been wronged. I am the victim here. And so I need to, you know, defend myself and stand up for myself. But this is, you're right, it's ego work.
Yeah.
And it's choosing to put your ego second to the what's in the best interest of your relationship.
Right.
You want to have a good relationship and you want to have one that's long-lasting.
Yes.
Then sometimes you have to put that stuff aside. And that is hard.
It is hard. And what I found is when you do it, it makes it easier for your partner to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Because Melissa didn't say anything in that moment because she, in this one, she was completely like, right? Mm. But I found in our relationship now, when it's her turn to do it, mm-hmm. she also does it. You know, she, early in our relationship, she was not an apologizer as much as I would have liked.
He ain't telling the truth, but it's fine.
He's telling the absolute truth. But this week, she was like, you know what? I apologize for that. And she wasn't being funny. She made a joke later, and I was like, man, that's, you know what? That made me feel good. Mm-hmm. That made me feel real good. So I think it's harder to do it, and especially for me, I'm a tit for tat person. Mm-hmm. Like, I say something tonight, and then you pat me on the head and say, good boy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, overall, it's better to do that sometimes when you're wrong for the better of the entire relationship.
That's right. That's right. Now, if you're having trouble taking responsibility or you're having trouble finding some perspective in this and you're just stuck in that, like, I'm a victim here and this is so unfair and the tit for tat, and this is something we'll talk about in a little bit, but it's always sort of a go-to get out of jail card, which is take a break. Like, you said something, I'm feeling defensive. Hey, I'm feeling defensive. Can I take a minute? Let me go take a pause. Let me go, like, walk it off and come back. And then maybe I can have a different perspective or maybe I can, you know, set my ego aside or maybe I can give this some thought and try to see how you might be thinking about this. So
I think that the idea of taking a break is so important and something that people don't often, like, take advantage of, especially if you grew up churchy and you know, you're told, don't let the sun set on your anger.
Oh, yeah.
And so you feel like we need to hash this out right now.
Or family of origin. In my family, we took that scripture literally. Mm-hmm. So we would argue that day just so we wouldn't go to bed angry.
Yeah.
But we'd be angry anyway.
Yeah.
We just argued and we'd be more angry. Melissa was like, I'm not going to talk about this early in our marriage. And then we just did it and it was so much better the next day.
Well, and it can often make things worse. And then you have to do all this repair to come back from it because from the research, it's actually a better thing to take the break. Like when you're upset, like go to bed angry. And then wake up and then you're in a different mindset. You have your physiology is different because when you start getting into conflict or discussions where you're getting upset, it's not just an emotional experience. Like your body is experiencing that and heart rate can go up and blood pressure can go up and you can't even like think clearly.
So true.
Can't communicate effectively. You can't be as empathetic. And so when that's happening, the best thing you can do is take a break. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we look at the stonewalling horsemen, because that's exactly what we need to do. But taking a break, I'd say a lot of people, they do take a break, but the way they do it is not necessarily the healthiest. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest thing is the coming back from the break. You don't just walk away and then just dust it under the rug and leave it there.
Can you give an example of what, like, an unhealthy way to take a break, like what that looks like?
Yeah, so storming, just walking off.
Oh, got you.
And not saying anything. And so we'll talk about this because this is stonewalling.
Okay.
Stonewalling is where you just refuse to respond. You don't engage. You don't, you know, you're just done.
You shut down.
But you shut down. But you do it in a way that's, you know, sort of like, I'm trying to get you. Got like, it. I'm not going to respond to you. It's sort of that righteous indignation coming up. And you just storm off or you walk away. You don't say anything. I've had folks tell me, you know, people will disappear, like their partner will disappear for hours or and they don't know where they mm-hmm. are. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it harms the connection and the trust in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And so you're left with basically feeling abandoned. Mm-hmm. And it does a lot of harm. And then you have to then, okay, now you have to not only deal with whatever you were talking about, but now you got to come back and repair what you just did in trying to handle that. And so a lot of people think, well, then I can't do that. I can't walk away. Yes, you can. But you have to do that, you know, with respect and kindness. So it's really the difference. So that's stonewalling. So the antidote to that is to go practice some self-soothing, some self-regulation. So you got to go take a breather, go for a walk, go do something that's going to calm you down. So can you say,
hey, you know what? We're upset. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do is go to the movies and watch 1917 because I like war movies. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in a couple hours, we both would have calmed down.
Yeah.
Is that a safe way to
ask for the time? Basically say, I need to take a break. Like, let's come back to this in a little bit. Or like, I'll be back. Or I'm going here. Mm-hmm. I'll come back in an hour. Like something that says like, I'll be back. And that the reason I'm taking the break is because I need to go, you know, calm my system down.
Yes. I think sometimes we try to force our process on our partner. Mm-hmm. And that's that. Kevin is guilty of that. Me, Kevin. because you're like, well, I can talk about it right now. Mm-hmm, right. But if the other person's not ready at the moment, it's still going to be contentious.
That is one of the hardest things that I talk to couples about.
Really?
Is for the person who's on the receiving end of, I need a break, whew, you can get even more upset because you're like, I am ready to talk about this right now.
Oh, and so now you need a break on top of everything else?
Yeah, and so they kind of, you know, when you're in that moment, it can still feel like you're being shut down or you're being, you know, they're turning away or they're ignoring you or whatever. The problem is that there is no good way to push through.
Yeah.
Because if one of you is, and this is from the Gottmans, this is a term they use, is flooded, which is like emotionally, physically overwhelmed, and all that physiology is going, heart rate, blood pressure, not much good is going to come from that conversation. So if you try to push through, like you stay here and we're going to talk about this right now, you're going to do more damage.
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
And so it's really hard for both the person to ask for a break, but it's also really hard for the other person to be like, I got to put a pause on this.
You know what's been helping us in our, first of all, the Love Hour has been helping me as a husband.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes the right language to frame these things, especially when we were both speaking the same language, it comes across a lot easier if you say, you know, like that thing I just tested out on you, Melissa hears that. Mm-hmm. So she knows when I use that. I'm not being sarcastic. Because you know when you're upset, you read things wrong. Mm-hmm. You read sarcasm. Melissa and I, we were arguing the other day. And it's so key. And I'm not going to put the whole argument out there. But we were so upset, right? Stressful situation. She misinterpreted a word I said, right? I said day and she heard date. Mm-hmm. And that was a big difference in what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, so she puffed up like, hey, no. I said day. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, let's take a break, actually. Mm-hmm. Because you're sometimes you're so upset. You're even taking information wrong because it's like a road rage incident.
So it's the fight or flight system that's basically being triggered or the freeze response. And when we're in that state, our state, and talking about nervous system, our nervous system state, if we're in like survival mode, that's going to shape everything that we're taking in.
How we take in
so
information.
So every experience that we have is going to be determined by what state we're in. So if I'm in a survival mode, I am searching and scanning for anything
that
is potentially threatening.
Wow.
And we do this whether
that's a physiology thing.
It's a physiology thing. So it's a nervous system that is primed to protect you. But in relationships, you know, the nervous system doesn't always understand. Yeah. Like, this is not actually threatening my life.
But it just feels like
that. But the
like
nervous system, it feels like that.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
What's mm-hmm. interesting about that, when going back to that example that Kevin gave, is that I was flooded. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, and I literally, and I kept saying, I need to take a break, Kevin. I can't think about this right now. Like, I was frustrated. I was overwhelmed. And it wasn't, I recognized that it wasn't my fault. It wasn't his fault. It was like this outside circumstance, but it impacted us tremendously. Yeah. And it was causing us to have this argument. I was like, I don't want to argue with you about something that you didn't even do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have this argument with you because it's not even my fault. This is an outside source
situation.
Putting mm-hmm. this pressure on the both of us, and now we're having to come to a decision that we weren't equipped to make because we thought we made a decision, and now we're forced in a new situation. Now I got to think of all these variables I didn't want to think about. And now we're arguing. Mm-hmm. I need a break. And I kept seeing it over and over and over until we got to the point where mm-hmm. he said that, and he said day, I said day, is still
heard.
Mm-hmm. That's still debatable. Mm-hmm. But in the moment, I was like, I need every bit of a break. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up taking Josiah to soccer practice. My sister ended up calling, and I was able to like, now, let me think about this mm-hmm. from the outside, mm-hmm. looking in, mm-hmm. and kind of come to a different answer, look at this from a different perspective. And we were able to come to a much better decision after that. Yeah. But we don't often, especially, I don't want to say men or women, because I do think you can be on either side, but especially as women, when you feel like, I want to talk about this right now, and your man is like, feels like he's in a corner, he's back into a corner, that's when you're flooded. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you say and do things that you wouldn't have normally said did because you're in this survival mode.
Yes, survival mode. So you're much more likely to be critical.
Yes.
You're much more likely to be defensive.
Yeah.
Because those are survival states, right? And so your body's kind of going haywire and taking over. And so it's really helpful to take that break.
Oh,
I just
want
to say one more
thing
before you go on. I was talking to a doctor about my diet and eating right and stuff. And he's like, your stress levels are high. And I wasn't like stressed in life. And he said, your body, if you have a poor diet, that also brings stress. He had front door stress and back door stress. Front door stress is like relationships, kids, money, finances, things like that, which I don't tend to be that stressed about. But he said, if you have a poor diet, then your body interprets that stress as the same way as, you know, so that reminded me of what you were saying about fight or flight. Like, your body doesn't care. And those tense, like, arguments, road rage or an argument with your wife or husband still feels like, you know, could be a point of thing. You know, I'm not saying domestic violence or anything like that, but it feels your emotions are still heightened. So it's really interesting that you say your body is reacting the same way, because it's assessing the situation and it's not caring about the relationship one. So even an argument you might have like on a basketball court, like I might be really intense, but I you know, the way I react to that person, they're not in a relationship with me, but the way I might react to my wife might have a longer standing impact than another thing, because, you know,
you're more invested.
You're more invested. Yes. Good word.
There is a lot at stake.
Yeah.
When you are, you know, having a conflict with your partner who you live with and who we place different expectations on. I expect you to be more like me and think like me. Yep. And we have sort of a way of us doing things versus, you know, if there's differences between what my friends are doing and I'm doing, I don't really care.
Yeah. Don't make me know, never mind.
Do whatever you want.
So good. So what we're talking about here are life skills. We're talking about skills that are life skills and translate into your relationship. And it's really great information. I also want to tell you another platform where you can get really great skills, and that is on Skillshare. I have discussed this on the last podcast, and a lot of you guys were asking, Melissa, which one are you talking about? Which one are you talking about? And it was the one about developing great habits, what we're talking about right now. But this talks about your creativity and your passions and how to do things more effectively in your life. So therefore you can have Kevin is a creative. I'll use this as an example. Kevin is a creative. So getting all of this other stuff out the way allows him to spend more time being creative. Joshua, Kevin, shut up. what you want to do is, if you listen to the Love Hour, you know what that's about. I'm not going to go into it. I'm just saying shut up, okay? But what you want to do is take one of these classes. Again, I listened to the one on developing great habits. It was so helpful. And if I got nothing else from it, I got do it afraid, do it anyway. Do not let perfection prevent you from doing whatever it is you have on your heart and mind to do. Do it. This is, it's 2020. It's the year of vision. Go do the things that you have in your mind. Go do them. Skillshare is a proud sponsor of the Love Hour. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/lovehour and get 2 free months of premium membership. You guys, sign up for this. Listen to that class. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to skillshare.com/lovehour. Again, that's skillshare.com/lovehour. Kevin is often one of those people that people look at and they're just like, how is he doing all the things? I wish. People do. I was listening to a podcast, actually it may have been on Skillshare. I was listening to something here recently and they were talking about, what did I tell you? Few people dream, less people do, even fewer execute.
Lots of people dream. Few people do, less execute.
Be a person that executes this year. Do it afraid, do it anyway. I also want to tell you about ShipStation. You guys know that we sell merchandise. We use ShipStation as our platform to do so. It is fantastic because it is a platform that lets you integrate all of your different shipping platforms.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, shipping
Interfaces.
That's
all of your shipping interfaces into what, whether you ship on or you sell on Etsy or on eBay or on your own website, you can pull all of that into one central location to allow you to ship your merchandise out a much simpler, more efficient way. Get this year off to a great start at ShipStation.com. Just use my offer code LOVE, that's L-O-V-E, to get a 60-day free trial. That's 2 months free of no-hassle, stress-free shipping. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and type in LOVE. That's ShipStation.com. Enter offer code LOVE. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen. I want to say this really quickly. If you are selling on multiple platforms, that is inefficient because you have to go to Etsy and pull your orders. You have to go to eBay and pull your orders. You have to go to your own website and pull your orders. And what you don't want to do is lose money because you're like, I just want to sell this all on one place. This allows you to get your money, get your coins from all the different places, but you just have one central location to ship from. Okay. ShipStation.com, child. Okay, go ahead, Dr. Lauren.
So we're talking about stonewalling.
Yes.
Which is another one of the horsemen. That's the third one. So you want to practice taking a break. When you take the break, what you want to do is make sure that you're doing something that is calming for you. Because the last thing you want to do is sit and stew about how your partner is being unreasonable and all the things that you're going to tell them when you come back together in, you know, 20 minutes. Let me tell you my argument and here's where you're wrong and I'm right. If you are rehearsing all that or stewing on that, you're staying elevated. You're flooded and you're staying flooded.
That was really good.
So you want to do something to really calm down. So go for a walk or go take a shower or whatever it is that helps you to calm down. But you want to make sure that before you come back, you feel like, you know, you've had some time to let your body decompress. And so I think, you know, based on the research, it takes about 20 minutes. If your blood pressure and your heart rate was elevated, it takes about 20 minutes for that to come back to a baseline. So you want to take about 20 minutes. But then, you know, life happens. And sometimes you're like, 20 minutes from now, I have to be somewhere. Yeah. I can't do this right now. Yeah. So what we recommend then is not to let it go more than 24 hours. Because at that point, then you're just avoiding it. Yep. You're not coming back. And it's just carrying over to the next time. Sure. So, you know, whenever is the next reasonable time where, okay, later when the kids are in bed or tomorrow morning after we've slept on it and we've calmed down, let's make some intentional time to come back and talk about what was just happening and what were we talking about, and let's revisit that.
I found a lot of times when we are fussing about something, we go to sleep, a lot of times I can see my error when I start to calm down. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what, Kev, you actually probably did trip a little bit and you probably took that the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like, so sometimes even though she might ask for the break, I can sometimes see myself in the thing because I'm not – you know, your tendency is to protect yourself mm-hmm. and defend your ego and defend your honor.
That's right.
And when you get a chance to be with yourself, you could be like, bro, you actually are tripping. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One thing I think is so important about this as well is the idea of not going back and like, let me get my argument together. Mm-hmm. I think that is mm-hmm. because listen, I'll take a break and also be like, so he said this, let me make sure I have an answer to that. Mm-hmm. He also said this, let me have an answer to that. And as a matter of fact, I forgot to pull evidence B637.
See how they do, Josh?
Let me make sure to pull this forward and submit this into evidence. That wasn't a discovery, but child, I would like to call to the stand.
Because that is great when you are in the courtroom, yes. right? You're like, let me just take a break so I can collect all my evidence.
Exactly.
But when you are supposedly in a loving relationship, that is not going to help.
This ain't no Law and Order episode,
that's
man. Right.
But that's what
this ain't Tyler Perry's A Fall from Grace.
Hello? But you end up, you don't use that time. They hold
you in contempt in court and in relationships.
That's right. Come We're going to come to that. Hey.
I just think that is a really, it was really good. Two things that you said. Number one, again, not using that as time to like go back and get your argument together. Yeah. But the other thing is the idea of not letting 24 hours go by.
Yeah.
I also think that's really important because it's so easy to be like, let's sleep on it. And actually, now we're in a much better space because we haven't talked about it. Mm-hmm. So let's just not talk about it at all.
What happens is it's like a backpack and you just keep adding all of this stuff, all this, you know, we didn't come back to this. We didn't come back.
Yeah.
You just keep throwing that in your backpack so that you've got this arsenal when you're coming to the next one. And you're
arsenal
like,
was a good word.
Oh, I'm not done. Let me also come to you with, you know, five other things that we took a break, we didn't come back to, and now I'm going to bring it all out at once.
And that's when you have an argument about you spilling the water and all of a sudden you're talking about things from 1989.
Yes, man. Yes, yes. Because let me come back to that because we were not finished.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what, and then conflict and disagreement feels so overwhelming and so overpowering because you're like, what are we even talking about right now? We were talking about this word that you heard this and I heard, and now we're talking about 10 other things and I don't even know where to go with that. And so that's where we shut down and we just don't, you know, come to it thoughtfully. So
that's you like, know, just like some... your iPhone. Another iPhone analogy.
Tell us.
Your iPhone gets too hot. It can't even process information. Yep. Your iPhone needs to cool down.
Yeah.
Literally, you cannot do anything when your phone gets, it literally will just be like, I can't do anything. I need to cool down. And you have to wait 10, 15 minutes for your phone literally cool. You have to move it out of a hot space to a cool space.
Good job.
And that's how relationships are. Literally will not do anything.
I love your analogies about the, you know, phone updates and all of that.
I'm good with cell phone analogies.
I have been actually using that same analogy for the longest
time. Don't let him take credit.
The Camo Stage Institute.
I think we're on the same page there.
How would he take credit for my analogy?
Is that your analogy?
Girl,
you got to keep updating.
Hold on, Miss Dr.
Lou. Oh, you know what? Yep. The email adding was me.
You know what? This might be a good time to talk about how there can be two different perspectives about something and both could maybe be right.
Listen, let's talk about it. Because one thing Kevin always does. She pulled
evidence from
1989. No, I'm not. Boy, this ain't done talking about it. I'm going to bring it up. I've been thinking about it. So here we go. That from 1991, Kevin is so good about...
most things
removing me from any scenario and allowing himself to have all of the credit.
Centering himself.
Centering. So in this example,
this is a complaint that she has
this
about
is a complaint.
Sounds
it's
like a
bordering
criticism.
On criticism.
Okay, well, it might end up being. So, in the example of the cell phone, the way that it actually started was I was showing Josiah how to work on his phone. And in the midst of literally, I'm like, this is how you do it. And I realized it's not working. And I was like, boom, light bulb. I share this and child, somehow or another, it has become
crazy
where he doesn't even remember that it was me.
I don't.
So
tell us more. Help us.
Talk about, you have a complaint.
I have a complaint. Tell me what my complaint is because I only have a criticism.
You're going to say, I didn't know I was doing therapy today, but here we go.
As well.
Here we go.
Me at the office and your therapist.
So what you might say is, you start with, I'm feeling frustrated or I'm feeling whatever it is that you're feeling. Put a feeling word in there. When
good.
I see, you know, us talking about this, I feel like I'm being dismissed, or, you know, that some of the ownership for that idea mm-hmm. is not being, you know, credited to me, and I feel frustrated. What I need is, and this is where
these
we're going to insert.
Words.
These are great words.
These are good words.
Because I can already feel myself taking this better than it should be. Like, you are still my idea. I'm a black woman. Grab.
Mm-hmm. I'm feeling left out, or I'm feeling dismissed, or I'm feeling frustrated. I feel like, you know, I'm not getting some credit here. And what I need is, and then you're going to put in at the end what your positive need is.
So good.
Now here's what a positive need is. A positive need is not a negative need. So a negative need, what we a lot of times do, will say, what I don't need from you.
Girl,
is,
listen.
What you need to stop doing is.
You turn into a black woman
want.
Right there.
Lord,
you had head bod, best bob.
You start with,
what I
feel
need.
Frustrated.
What I do not want.
Where
and what I don't want you to
go?
Do is.
You from Baltimore. What I don't need is this. You feel me, cuz? I was like, Dr. Lauren.
That was good, though.
Because then what you're doing is now the other person is getting defensive right. and they're not listening to you.
And they're
and
not
now
even
going to
address your complaint at
you're
all.
You're off to the races. Nobody's getting heard.
Do you
so
give
when
a
you say a positive need is basically saying, here's what I do want or need. You know, I need some credit for this. I need you to acknowledge, yeah. you know, that I had some say in that, or I had, you know, some yeah. idea that I shared as part of that. So, you know, here's how I feel. Here's the situation. Here's what I need. Mm. And then it comes across as more of an invitation. It's like, I'm inviting you to do this thing that will, you know, have, you know, real impact on me. And yeah. then that will help us.
Yeah.
Dr. Lauren, that was really great.
Really great.
Because it is so easy to start off so well and only get 50% of the answer in this. Mm-hmm.
And
because,
end up with what I don't need. Is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Me, Melissa, today, right now, will say something like, I feel like this. Mm-hmm. And what I don't need you for to do is.
Yes.
So how about in the future?
We got the first part.
Listen, oh, well. All day.
Soft answer, she's great at the
listen,
entry.
Soft entry, got
soft
that.
Soft entry.
And then let's end with what you shall not do in the future.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, yes.
And so
that's all I end up hearing. Forget it. Yes. If you end like that, you forget about the soft entry.
So good.
A lot of this stuff, actually, and I know the Gottmans talk about parenting stuff, which I haven't even, you know, started to really dive into probably until I have my own children, and then I'll start looking at it.
But, take your time.
But there's a lot overrated. Of crossover. Yeah. In how you talk to children and how you talk to adults. Mm. And, you know, it might sometimes help to think about that. Like what you want to do when you're telling your kids, like, don't do that. You want to actually invite them and teach them, like, here's what we want from you. You know, we're going to sit, you know with
what?
Our shoes on the floor rather than good. Don't put your feet on the couch.
So my oldest son, this happened yesterday. He has become a shower monger. Okay. I came home from the gym. He's in the shower. Mm. I take a 15-minute shower. I get out. He's still in the shower, right? My older brother is the worst. Mm. He takes showers with no idea or care that other people live in the house. You know we ain't got hot water heater for everybody to take a shower for an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to teach my oldest son that I wanted to be more considerate, right? So what I told him was, hey, I actually don't mind you taking a hot shower for as long as you want. The only issue is, so my youngest son, went to take a shower, the water's ice cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all I want you to do is either take a shower after everybody else is done, or say, hey, I'm about to take a shower. It's probably going to be a long one. Mm-hmm. Do you want to hop in first? Because my youngest son don't be in there. He ain't going to be before you're long, right? So, and he was like, because I told him, what I want you to do is be more considerate of others as you grow up. Because you might be a roommate. We were on tour and stuff. My brother just didn't care. Like, other people would be in there like, bro, I need to take a shower. You're messing up everything. You running late. So I had that conversation with him like that, and he was like, I understand that. I get that. Like, you know, because he just be in there doing God knows what. But he's not thinking about other people and himself. And I feel like addressing that way was better than, boy, stop taking that shower. You know, I got all that hot. That's all my mom did. You don't pay nothing on that bill. You ain't putting nothing on that 5 minutes top. And you're like, okay, bye.
Well, and because you're basically just saying, here's what not to do. And then leaving it up to the other person to decide, all right, so now what am I supposed to do? And they might come up with their own ideas. And that might be still very different from what you were
so
needing
good.
Or wanting. So if you're, you know, kind of saying, here's how to get it right with me. Here's what works for me. Here's how we can, you know, best proceed from here. And so, you know, then it leaves it, you know, pretty clear that it's not just don't do this, but it's do this.
Right. As an
and you might even be able to do what you wanted to do anyway if you do it this way.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. Yep.
Good.
So positive need. That's what you want to end with. I feel, here's what's going on. Positive need.
Got love it.
That was how good. You do that. We got one more horseman. Mm-hmm. It is the worst one of all of them. Mm. And what I mean by worst one, it is the number one predictor for divorce. And what that means is if you do this routinely without changing your behavior. And that one is contempt. Mm-hmm. And contempt is basically coming at your partner with this sort of superior position, like, I know stuff, you don't know stuff, or I am morally superior to you. So it's looking down on them, and it's coming across with this more aggressive or disrespectful tone.
Yeah.
So when it's like, how many times do I have to tell you, you know, what is it about this that you just do not understand?
Sounds like how people talk to children for sure.
Right.
That's definitely how many times
I've said it. Shaming.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good. And it leaves you feeling disconnected. Like, that is not a safe place for me.
I almost got upset, and you were just using that as an example. Right? I'm like, right. Melissa never talks to me like that.
Yeah.
But I imagine if she said something to me like that, there's nothing you can say after that that's going to be healthy.
And then people wonder, you know, we're not feeling intimate. We're not feeling close. What is going on? And you know, when you talk like that, you know, you might want to look back, because often that's, you know, someone's parent or something that's modeled to you.
Yeah.
But that is not a way to talk to each other for a loving relationship. It does not lead to intimacy, closeness, or safety. Mm-hmm. It actually leaves you feeling less safe, less secure, and it's very threatening. So contempt is, you know, the number one predictor that the relationship will not last if you continue to do that on a regular basis. And so what you want to do instead is, so overall, the way to, you know, steer clear of contempt is to build a culture of appreciation. And what that means is to recognize what you appreciate about your partner and to constantly be mindful of that and noticing what you appreciate and having that sort of positive perspective in the relationship. In the moment when that's coming up and you're starting to go into that sort of contemptuous space, you want to just talk about your own feelings and needs. Because when you're contemptuous, you're focusing on the other person and how they are doing something that is, you know, something you don't like or disagreeable to you. If you then come back to you and talk about, I'm just really frustrated, or I am really struggling with this, or this really hit a nerve for me, here's what's going on.
Yep.
So it's very similar to, you know, using a softened startup and talking about, you know, your positive need. Mm-hmm. It's basically just coming back to that. Talk about yourself. Stop focusing on the other person. Talk about yourself.
I think one of the, common thread is the word I'll use between all four of these, is that in all of them, some way, shape, or form, you end up attacking the person, like the actual, like your spouse as a person. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying in almost all of them is to kind of reframe that. And what, and I can understand why contempt can be the number one, because in that, what you're saying is, all of these things have culminated where you are the problem. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I need to babysit you. Mm-hmm. I feel like I need to help you along the way. And I just want to change everything about you so I don't have to do this.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the hardest things, and certainly one of the most common things, is folks coming in, especially to when they come to couples therapy, with at least one person saying, this person is the problem, and your job, we are hiring you to fix them.
I'm good.
That
she be tripping.
That is a predictor that this is not going to work so well.
Wow.
Because you're already coming in, and that's contempt and criticism.
It's all of it.
It's all of those things. So if you come in and your main mission is fix them, that is not couples therapy. And that is not going to produce the loving, long-term, you know, nurturing relationship that you're supposedly wanting.
Yeah.
Because if you abdicate any responsibility for anything in your relationship, what is that really saying? You have no power and no influence?
Yeah. No agency?
And if that's true, then what are we doing here?
Right.
If you have no influence and no power, that's not a relationship.
That was a lot. I could see people, and I guess we'll get to here as well, on like I don't know, how do you find yourself in any one of these buckets? Like, how do you find your way up? I know you've talked about the antidotes, but like, I could see people being like, yeah, but Dr. Lauren, what you don't understand is they are the problem. Like, totally. He is lazy.
Totally.
She does talk too much. She does always have an opinion. She like, that's what you don't get. Like, this is cute, but really it's them.
Right.
So how do you find, like, how do you get to the other side
there
of that?
There is always work to be done for both people. And it's about finding what your work is. So, I mean, legitimately, I hear stories, and of course, I usually get just one side if they're coming in by themselves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when they're both here, there's usually intervention for both.
Yeah.
But for example, let's say you have a partner who is very contemptuous and very critical, and you're just like, oh, I'm just trying to like get through the day. Then we need to talk about your boundaries. We need to talk about, you know, are you being assertive with your needs? Are you, you know, stepping away when things are getting out of control and you need to take a break?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one thing is, if you notice, we kind of referenced this earlier, if you're the one who's like on the receiving end of defensiveness and the other person is getting defensive, or the other, if they're doing any of the things and you're like, oh, I see what's happening here, but they are not calling the break, or they are not recognizing or self-aware, then you call it, but you do not do it this way. I think that you're flooded right now and you really should be calling a break. And obviously you're not noticing that that's what needs to happen right now.
I was going to do that.
That
was
not the way to do that.
That was good.
You're really flooded right now.
Yeah.
And I'm
you are
take
flooded. You're not following the rules. You know, the therapist said you're supposed to take a break. You're not doing it right. That is just, that
you
is contempt.
You and the therapist can shut up. How about that?
That is contempt. That is contempt. That is like, I am doing the rules and you're not doing the rules.
Look at me and look at you.
Which will not produce a loving and committed and trusting relationship.
That was good modeling, Dr. Lori.
So, I've been in the room with a few people before. I know how it goes. So, what you might do is say, I think that things are getting, you know, heated, or things are getting, you know, maybe there's some flooding happening. I think maybe we should take a break. You call a break.
It's so much easier in these things when you are saying, I feel like,
that's right.
I don't know why that different phrasing.
Because you do not feel attacked.
Because you don't feel
you
attacked.
You don't feel like.
Because I'm just explaining my feelings.
I'm just telling you, I'm not feeling this right now.
Yeah.
I am in a, you know, flooded space. And regardless of what you're feeling or what you're doing, or whatever, I got to go take care of myself.
Yeah, no, that's good.
So, you know, we can talk about this later, but right now I'm going to go take the break that I need. And if the other person is, you know, kind of the one who's flooded and they're not recognizing it, you can do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think things are getting kind of, you know, flooded.
Yep.
Let's take a break. Let me come back in a little while. Now, if you're the one who's asking for the break, ideally, that's because you're the one who's flooded.
Right.
And you're recognizing that and you're taking a break. Then you are the one. It's like a volleyball. Like the ball is in your court now. You're taking a break because you need to calm down. So it is your job to come back and say,
that was good.
I'm ready to have the conversation. Now,
because otherwise I'd be like, well, you never said
you
would
know?
Talk.
Yeah, yeah. How do you know when the break is done?
That's
and
good.
It could be
that's
hours. Good. It could be I need to go do some things and then we can do this later. So if you're the one asking for the break, ideally you're the one coming back and saying, I'm ready now, you know, but then you want to ask, are you ready?
Ooh.
Oh, is that's
now a
good
time? Because you could be like, I'm in the middle of something right now. This is not the time for me to talk about this. And if we try to push through, it's maybe not going to go so well right now.
That is really good.
So you kind of say, I have cooled off. I'm ready to talk. Yeah. Do we want to come back to that? And if the other person is like, no, I'm in the middle of something. Then we can
say,
okay.
You can't get mad.
No. As long as you're not like just delay.
Like,
yeah. Never a good time.
Yeah.
But then you might say, okay, do you want to come find me when you're ready?
I could do 4:30. I got a call. Yeah. I could do 4:30.
Yeah. Like what, you know, should I come back in a little bit? Do you want to come find me?
Okay.
Let's, you know, set aside some time to come back to this.
Good modeling. That was really, she modeled how to have, modeling the behavior.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The ball is in my court. I come back to you. You say you're not ready. Should I come find you? Do you want to come find me?
What should we do?
So that way we're
that
clear.
We have a plan.
Mm-hmm. It's so good because you also, I came back. They didn't say, okay. And then we have this like avoidance and no one comes back to it.
Yeah.
So freaking good. This is free game that we're giving you guys. Free game that we are giving you guys. And I want to tell you about Honey, which is a free online shopping tool that automatically finds the best promo codes and applies them to your shopping cart for free. They do this for you for free. Okay, that's free 99. That's free to you. I don't know why I'm talking like Razor Ramon. And you know how great it feels to save money. Listen, we've had discussions on financial planning and saving money in your pocket and anything you can do to save a few coins. Please do those things. Honey has over 18 million members and has saved them over $2 billion in saving. Honey also supports over 30,000 stores online, including, okay, I actually use them for Macy's and Sephora. They also have Target and Best Buy, and they're adding more every single day. And if you don't find yourself covered with Macy's, Target, or Sephora, I don't know what you're doing with your life, because literally that's all you need in life. All of your shopping can be done between Macy's, Target, and Sephora. Don't at me. This isn't up for debate. Using Honey feels pretty great. Think of it as your little daily victory. Plus, it's free to use and installs in just a few seconds. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/love. That's joinhoney.com/love. Join today. Save some coins. Ain't nothing wrong with it. Okay, so before we took the break, we ended with you going over the last and the most, the highest toxic, indicator, the most toxic, which is contempt. Did you have anything else you wanted to add there?
You know, it's interesting because how contempt shows up in a relationship is surprising to a lot of people, because we might be engaging in contemptuous
and not even realizing,
and not realizing it, because it's not only this really overt disrespect. It can be through mockery. It can be through sarcasm. It can be through eye rolling and, you know, putting your arms together like this and doing this whole thing. Like, that can all be contemptuous. And so we may not be realizing that we're doing some of those things. But those can come across. Now, is all sarcasm and is all of that? No, it could be playful. It could be fun. But it depends on the context, and it depends on how it's being received. So there's times
how it's
where
being received is important.
It is important.
Because a lot of times you might not even intend to have something received that way.
Right.
But if it doesn't matter what your intention is. It matters
the
result.
Difference between intention and impact.
Yes.
So you can acknowledge my intention was not to cause harm, but I see that that caused harm.
I use that basketball analogy all the time. Mm-hmm. People don't, if I didn't mean to foul you and I was trying to block your shot, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If I was going for the ball, but I hit your arm, it's still a foul. But I was, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Same thing happens in relationships.
Yep. I mean, you can talk about your positive intentions, because it's nice to know that you didn't have, you know, negative intentions.
It does
intentions,
help phrase it. Yeah.
But you also acknowledge the impact. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's also important, because it kind of goes back to, I can't remember which one you were talking about. But you were saying having an overall negative experience in relationship versus positive. If you overall think your relationship is positive and my husband or my spouse is like an overall positive person or great person and loves me and cares for me, when they do something, I'm more likely to give them the benefit of the doubt.
That's right.
Than we are in a contemptuous relationship, I think he is a problem. All the problems in our relationship are a result of him. I'm not going to give him that benefit of the
doubt. Because then your state, the nervous system, how you show up to almost every interaction is likely going to be some of that fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to automatically, like before a word is spoken, you're ready to be defensive.
Yep.
You're ready to, you know, criticize. You're on that attack. So if you're coming in from a, you know, loving place or a place of respect, and so that's why it's really important to pay attention to the emotional bank account of the relationship. And so something that the Gottmans talk about and a lot of people are familiar with is their 5-to-1 ratio.
Mm-hmm.
The 5-to-1 ratio is basically that when you're in a conflict, when you're like, I have a complaint or something's bothering me, you want to have 5 positive exchanges to every 1 negative.
Okay.
That's actually their conflict ratio. So a lot of people think that that's just in general in life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a conflict ratio. So when you are in the middle of, I have a complaint, I'm feeling this way, there might be some ways that you can throw some positivity into that. So taking responsibility or saying, you know, I see that you have a point, or what my husband does, which I am working on because I find it really hard when I'm like, I don't like you right now. And he will put his hand on mine and just like reach out and be like, hey, you know, let's talk about this.
Aww.
And so that's a moment of, that's a positive. or
it means I'm not threatening.
You know, it means that, you know, we're gonna figure this out. So
that's
you want really sweet.
I don't know if I'd be here for it though.
I know. I struggle with this because it's really hard, especially if you're in that fight or flight mode, to be like, you are a threat
I've tried
me.
Some hugs in that thing, and they were not well-received hugs.
So it totally depends on your relationship. Yeah, sometimes you can use humor to diffuse the situation.
Oh, I'm humor diffused.
Sometimes it makes it worse.
And sometimes it makes it worse.
So you have to know, you know, what works for one
Gauge
relationship
the room,
doesn't
man.
Work for the other
and
or the
also,
time.
Yeah. I know I'm interrupting you a lot because it's really interesting.
That's okay.
What worked last time doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work this time.
Context
is important. Context
is everything.
Yeah, and
everything.
It's like, but last time, that's in sex, like more than one area. Yeah. You can't just say, well, this worked last time. I'm going to try the exact same
you
way.
You might know that in general, most of the time, this could work. But then depending on the circumstance, for some reason today, that's not working because there were just a bunch of things, you know, that piled up and it's just not going to work today. So, you know, but trying to infuse some positivity, even in the midst of conflict, by softening your startup and using the antidotes and taking responsibility is going to help to, you know, get to let's be on the same page.
Let me tell you what, Dr. L, FM, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's people. When people say marriages work, we're never really outlining what that means.
Oh my
we
God,
just
no.
say it. Like when we are arguing, Melissa and I, we don't tend to have like screaming matches. We've never actually screamed at each other ever. Never got physical. Yep. But that doesn't mean the arguments aren't intense.
Right.
And trying to remember all the stuff. And now, mind you, this is in a relationship where we literally do a podcast about relationships and trying to remember all. And you know what's funny? So this stressful situation Melissa and I were talking about, this is so funny, right? I've sat on this Love Hour 2 years, learned all this info, right? Mm-hmm. When that outside factor came in, it was like I forgot everything I ever learned. Mm-hmm. I know to cater to her emotions and not to logic. Mm-hmm. But some, and it's, I use a lot of sports analogies for myself and for the men watching. It's like a quarterback knowing you're not supposed to throw this pal from this place. You're not supposed to throw across your body. You know that, but you do it sometimes and it gets intercepted.
It's the fight or flight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what's happening. So if you are entering into that zone, that's when you're going to
forget all your training.
Things. And I do it too. I'm a therapist. I study this. I practice it.
But you
I
make mistakes.
Talk to, Oh, yeah. You ask my husband.
He's like, but you know this. And like,
you know
things
it.
In theory and practicality are different.
Which is why you want to be so aware of what state you're in. If you're starting to get into that fight or flight, when you're entering that flooding zone, game is over.
Game over.
That's good.
Because then when you come back, then you can be like, I'm going to say the I feel statements and I'm going to do all the things that I know how to do. But you can't. Your body will not let you do that because you were in fighting mode.
That is so
good.
So
it doesn't matter that you know all the things. It doesn't matter that you've read all the. You need to make sure that you're not flooded. If you're flooded, it's over. Take a break. Come back.
And actually, as you say that, I'm realizing in these arguments when I've seen myself, it's after that flooding moment has passed.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm able to more see the situation clearly.
Because
my emotions are. Sometimes just not having your emotions high
allows
you to see more clearly.
That makes a huge difference. And that is not like a flaw in you or in me. That is just a part of our humanity and how our nervous system is basically looking out for us. It's like if something is about to go down, I'm ready for it.
Absolutely. It's like being hungry or tired. Like, you know, if my wife or I'm hungry, like, let's just not do this because I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do, I might not even be upset if
hangry,
I were full.
Hangry is a thing.
Hangry
this
for
is
this
not
guy.
The time to talk to me about that because I need to eat.
Yeah.
And that's serious.
Absolutely. I'm tired.
Survival, right?
Yes.
I need to get my basic needs met.
That's your
that
body.
That also works when you're tired, right? Which is why you want to go to bed and then come back. If you're tired, you're not applying all these skills.
No.
You are just like, make this go away right now.
Emily said that last week, too. She said, like, hunger and tired are drives.
Yes.
They're physical drives. So they're going to even override.
Everything.
Because you will die if you don't sleep, you don't eat. So your body's like, yo, forget all that you're talking about.
Yep.
Eat.
Doesn't matter.
Go to bed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we're really trying to literally override physiology. Yeah. And it's not going to work in anything.
That's a losing battle.
That's a, such great information
so
today.
So you really want to take the break. So 5 to 1 is the ratio of positive to negative exchanges during conflict, wow. the day-to-day ratio, just, you know, going about your life, is actually 20 to 1.
Oh, Lord.
I know.
20
I know.
To 1 in a day-to-day? To 1.
So let me break this down because it sounds really overwhelming. Yes, so 20 to 1, positive things between you and your partner versus the one negative. That's about keeping your balance in your account high. So what that can translate to is a quick text in the morning. Hey, hope you have a good day today. Thinking of you. Talk to you later. Or, hey, I was at the grocery store. Your favorite cereal was there. I picked it up for you. Like one, two. Like each of those things is a deposit. So these are often not grand gestures. And what people get stuck on is they try to like make up a lot of negativity with these big overtures. Like, okay, we're just going to go on a big trip I'm going to buy you something nice. And that's going to make up for all of the negativity. And it just doesn't work like that. So you have to come back. So think about it like if it was an actual account, right? Mm-hmm. You get a big job, you make a big chunk of money, but you were in the hole pretty bad.
You were overdrawn in your relationship.
You're still not even in the green yet.
Fees. Interest, additional stuff.
Right.
And you got a big check. Yes. Right. Now you're just less overdrawn.
Now you're just less overdrawn.
You're not positive.
You're not in the positive. So it needs to be something that we do regularly. So every little thing that you do, John Gottman calls it small things often. Little gestures, a little, hold my hand, little things.
So I think that's what, okay, now I can see a little more clearly how he can see that, right, in a relationship. So I'm going to big myself up for a second here. And I tend to do that, I think because I really care about Melissa, I want life to be easy for her. My brother was with us last weekend. We have a tiny garage. He parked my car basically in the middle because he's not used to our, like me and Melissa be like, we know how to whip it in there. So one thing I did is move my car back out so she could fit her car in. Mm-hmm. And then I took her car to the gym because I couldn't get my car out. Mm-hmm. And I filled up her gas tank. Mm-hmm. Two things in one day, neither of which was like, okay, can we have sex tonight?
Right.
Which is what I used to do earlier in my relationship. Like, look, I did seven things. Now, please.
Yeah.
But no, but I did things. Mm-hmm. So, and Melissa does the same thing. Hey, I don't know if you ordered. I picked something up for you to eat. And also, I picked your shirts up from the cleaners because I was stopping by. Like, just little stuff like that. And you probably don't even realize when they're happening, but you do realize when they're gone.
Right.
And they're not happening.
Which is why, that culture of appreciation is so important.
Yeah.
So you want to take some time. And the Gottmans even recommend, take a moment each week to sort of take inventory for what you're appreciating about partner. So one thing that they have, this is one of John Gottman's exercises. I use it all the time with couples, which is called the State of the Union.
I love that.
That's their term. It's basically some people call it a marriage meeting or a check-in.
Love that.
So on a weekly basis, ideally, carving out some time, you can call that like your Sunday, check-in or whatever, to kind of sit down and say, what's going well? Here's what I appreciate.
Yep.
Hey, something happened the other day that bothered me. We need to circle back to it. Let's, talk about that.
That's so
and then
much,
let's talk about what's coming up this week. How can I show up for you? What can I do to make your life better?
Can I show up for you? Such a great question.
So good. So then, if you're doing that on a regular basis, and the reason why it's recommended to be weekly is that if stuff's going on during the week and you didn't get a chance to really suss it out, you can sit down and say, let's kind of tackle this now so that it doesn't grow into resentment and contempt and negativity. And so that's an opportunity. And so one way to do that is to start your meeting with what you appreciate. And, Dr. Gottman recommends five things that you appreciate. And the five, which I actually just learned, I didn't realize that it was intentional. The five is for the 5 to 1. So five positives. Then you get into your one, here's the stuff that's bugging me. And then you want to end with a positive.
You know what's good about this? So another sports analogy coming in hot. In the NFL, they have film study, right? You have one game a week. And then you have film study, and here's what you did well. This is perfect. And here's a mistake. And here, you know what I mean? And I think even for me and Melissa, the more recent, because in our marriage, when she says I do stuff, I'm gonna give me examples. Mm-hmm. Give me 17 examples where I messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And if you're doing it weekly, those things that happen are more fresh. Mm-hmm. So they're more, you know, as time goes on, you might literally not even remember mm-hmm. what happened. Or but the person who was offended, their memory is clear
the
about
emotions
that.
Are
I was going to say,
I don't necessarily remember what you said. So I forget what the quote is. There's a very well-known quote about like you won't remember what was said or what happened. You remember how they felt, how they made you feel. Too. And so that you're going to remember. I don't remember what you did 3 years ago, but I remember that really upset me, you know, and I'm still holding on to that.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm. So if you have a regular check-in and you make time for that, then you're really kind of getting some of that stuff figured out as it goes. And you might be then shaping the next week. So it's like, hey, let's not keep repeating the same thing that's not working.
Yeah.
And let's figure out a way to make it work this week.
And you know what else? Sometimes you don't even realize how something's being perceived or interpreted. So somebody says it at a State of the Union where our emotions are not high. Like, oh, you know what? By the way, you've been doing this, this, and that, and it doesn't really work. Let's try this. I'm like, oh, okay. I thought that was cool. My bad. You know, what I didn't even know.
Yep.
So that's a lot of easier way to interpret that information than always at an argument.
It's also if you're planning it, then you're less likely, hopefully, unless you're really good with timing, you're not flooded in that moment.
Yeah.
So you're coming into it and you're both kind of, okay,
open.
We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about things. And each of us get a chance to talk about, you know, if something's bothering us.
Yeah.
And the more you do it, the less stuff there'll be to talk about
because you're addressing
and the easier it'll be. So the hardest thing is to get something like this started, because if you haven't been doing this for a while and you're harboring a lot of resentment, you're going to come in and you'll be like, okay, meeting number one of a list that's like this long. Here's all the things that are bothering me.
All the things.
The other things that you want to make sure that you're doing is you're talking about one thing at a time.
I was just going to ask you, how do you avoid this starting off with, here are the five things that I appreciate you very quickly. Mm-hmm. Now let's get to the real stuff.
Yeah.
And it's an argument.
One thing at a time.
That's the key.
So there was something that bothered me this week. Can we talk about it? And then you do the like, I feel this is what happened. This is what I need.
Yeah.
And then you finish that first. Is there anything more you want to say? Are we good? Now let's move on to the next thing. And maybe you only have like one or two of those each week. And then you might even write a list. Now, I know that sounds like we don't want to be like tit for tat, like here's all the things that you did wrong.
Tit for tit.
But it's like, you know, if there's some things that we haven't gotten to today that are important, that are sort of bothering me, maybe I'm going to just make a note, like don't forget to talk about that bill that never got paid that we didn't get a time to talk about because we got other things to do. Let's make space for that next week. So that, you know, we come back to it.
I love that. And even limiting perhaps the negativity, especially if the ratio is 5-1, don't come with your 5 positive and talk about 10.
That's right.
Negative.
That's right.
Then you've just washed out.
Yeah.
And so to keep that balance, maybe you only cover one or two things at a time. Yeah.
Right.
Or in a session.
And you want to kind of deal with, it's sort of like triage, deal with the most critical thing first. So if there's something that just happened and we haven't talked about it or it's really under my skin, we're going to start there first. And then, you know, depending on how that goes and how much time we have, maybe we'll get to a bigger issue.
That's
good stuff. That was
you
good
got
stuff.
Out here, got a gunshot wound to the chest and a hangnail. You're like, forget the gunshot. Let's start. Like, hold on.
Like,
let's
this
just,
is bothering. No,
let's just put some pressure on this wound first.
Right.
You're very good at this. You I can see why you haven't practiced.
Thank you. So the other thing that's come up a lot and I've been getting a lot of feedback about online is perpetual issues versus solvable issues.
Ooh.
And this is a tough one for a lot of people. So 69%, which I'm a sex therapist, so I love the 69%.
I love 69%
of the things that you get into disagreement with each other is not solvable. So what that means is it's about stable differences between the two of you. So if like one person's
this
more
is a whole new concept, so tell me more.
This is so critical for couples to understand.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you're more of an extrovert and you're more of an introvert or vice versa, that's not going to change. Like, that is part of who you are and how you are. And maybe it does change, but likely not.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you might have the same thing come up over and over again about how long do we stay at the party and how many parties do we go to in a week and how often do we hang out and is it a big group or a small group or whatever. And you keep getting into the same thing over, I want to stay later. Well, I want to leave early. Well, I don't want to go because it's too many people. Mm-hmm. Or it's, and you just keep getting into this over and over and over again because you're still different
who you are
around that, and you still have different preferences around that. So rather than the idea of like, let's solve this issue, one of us is going to have to become the extrovert or the introvert to match the partner, it's more like we're different. And so how are we going to manage these differences? Sometimes I might, so I'm more introverted, sometimes I might say, all right, I'm going to like take a nap and go and, you know, try to be social and really get in there because, you know, we haven't done that in a while and I know it's important to you.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, I might take a separate car and go home early and you stay and you have a good time and I'll be there. And then when I've had enough and it's my boundary, time to go to bed, I'm out of there. And we have that understanding going into it. So you're not going to make me want to be the life of the party. You're not going to make me stay all night. We're going to work with that difference and we are just going to learn to live with that difference. And that we want to do with respect. Because if I am fighting tooth and nail to try to make you more like me, it's not going to work.
Ever.
Yes. You had one.
I know. Yeah. This is so good. And the reason why is because how often are we fighting against each other trying to reach a resolution that will never be?
That's right.
And so instead of saying that you create, you empower yourself to create a solution that works for you.
Yeah.
That is not you become me, I become you.
That's right. And so it's basically like constantly shaping. Like your compromise might be like, for this party, this is how we're going to handle it. And we have a game plan going into it. But the next party, it might depend. If you had a really bad week and you're really tired and you might be like, usually I would try to like, you know, suck it up and show up. But this week, I'm not coming. I just can't. And so you're just trying to navigate that. So you keep kind of coming up with, you know, some different alternatives or compromise, or you're negotiating. And then you come back to it again next time and you negotiate. So the goal is not resolve, like make you more extroverted. Mm-hmm. Like that is not a goal. You can't do that.
No.
But the goal could be, how are we going to go to this next event where you can honor some of what you need, I can honor some of what I need, we can make this work. And that is 2/3 of the things that you're going to argue about.
That's... I know this wasn't the point of this, but that is so good.
So, good.
So Melissa's sister and Greg. So I love movies, right? Melissa enjoys movies. She likes going. We go as a family. Greg loves movies too, but Mel doesn't. She doesn't like the experience and all this stuff. Used to get into this all the time. And then Mel once said, you know what? It's about a year or two ago. She said, you know what, Greg? I don't mind if you go to the movies with Kev. Like me and Greg and, well, boy, we'll go see like King Kong. We'll go see like action movies. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't want you to not do what you like to do, but I also don't want to go. Mm-hmm. And Greg was like, I don't mind seeing him with Kev and the boys. Mm-hmm. And Melissa comes almost all the time, but sometimes Mel will come to the house and Melissa will be like, oh, you guys go give Greg my ticket. Mm-hmm. And now everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have to do something she doesn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And he's not prevented from doing something he likes. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be a solvable issue. She's not going to want to like movies. So, but that stuff, when it's not solvable, sometimes it turns into a legit argument. Which I mean, why don't you just come to the movies with me? And somebody else would probably go to the movies with me. They might like it.
That's right.
You know, like we and always do that in our relationship.
Then we're in, that is a bad train right there.
Yeah.
Because what you just described is a negative comparison. And negative comparison is when we start to look to our partner and they're like, I don't have to put up with this because somebody else would want to go to the movies with me.
Yeah.
And so I can go find somebody else. And that actually can put you at risk going outside of your relationship.
Yeah, just to go to the movies.
Because you're starting to think something better is out there. But, you know, a lot of people, they're kind of freaking out about 69% is not solvable. So, like, what's the point? What are we doing here? Let's just pack it all in. Like, why would we do this? I actually find that to be a very comforting number.
I do, too.
And I'll tell you why. Yeah.
Please tell me. Because I don't know why.
I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
What I find comforting is knowing that this doesn't mean that my relationship is not the right one for me. I didn't choose the wrong partner. We're not in trouble necessarily. It just means that I am partnered with someone who's different from me. And we're different in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And so it's going to be 69% with this partner or this partner or this partner. Right. And so it's not about choosing, you know, somebody where you're going to change that number. Like that number is stable across couples. We got 40 years of research to say that. You're just different people. But you're going to pick which problems you're going to deal with perpetually over a lifetime. So if the problems that you're dealing with are also deal breakers for you, then we've got an issue, because that becomes really hard to live with.
Yep.
Versus you like movies, I don't like movies, we're going to have that difference for the rest of our lives and we're just going to learn how to live with it.
So a couple things that you've said. Number one, I found that number to be very comforting as well. I think you articulated what I was feeling. But the other thing is that what you're also saying is that I don't have to be with someone who is me to make this relationship work. And a lot of times when we're in the one of those four states of the apocalypse, it's because we think this doesn't work because he's so different than me, because she's so different than me. Instead of saying it doesn't have to work for this to work. I don't know if that, that makes sense. So you just have to be creative in finding your solutions that actually satisfy both of your needs. Because if you don't creatively find those solutions together, what happens is that becomes interpreted differently. So it's no longer just about, I don't like the movies. It's, you don't want to spend time with me. It's not only do you not go to the movies, but you don't go to my work functions.
Then you go back to the courtroom and you're fact finding all the evidence that says,
to support,
here's why this is never going to work and you're the wrong person for me and all this stuff. But I just love that, like, this doesn't matter whether you're with, you know, whoever.
So that next person might go to the movies, but they might hate your mom.
That's right.
And that's what's more important. Right. I can go to the movies by myself, but you don't get along with my mom. That's a deal breaker.
So you pick your problems.
So you pick your problems.
You pick which problems you're willing to live with. And they could irk you and they could bother you. And, you know, sometimes you just mean, oh man, this is so frustrating. But it might be, you know, if I trade this problem in, I'm trading for another problem. I'm not trading for, like, problem-free. Problem-free does not exist.
You can't even be problem-free with yourself.
That's right.
If you lived alone, you get on your own nerves. Like, you're supposed to get up and clean.
That's right.
I don't feel like it. Them dishes is in the sink. So how can we expect to work with a relationship we can't even get along with our own bodies?
That's right. That's right. I was at a training with the Gottmans studying for their couples therapy, and John said something which I found to be kind of profound. And he said, you know, we often will pick a partner because they're a bit different, like because they're not exactly like us, because that probably doesn't work either. If you're with somebody who's exactly like you, there's no balance there.
Yes, no balance.
Somebody competing for jokes with me, you know,
right? So we're looking for somebody who's different. But then once we secure the relationship, we're like, okay, now make me more like you and make you more like me. And we try to make them like us. And that's where you have the conflict.
Yeah.
Rather than knowing that you're you, I'm me, and there's a certain level of autonomy and we're individuals and we're just not going to blend 100% on everything. And that's just, that is relationships.
You need peanut butter and jelly to make the sandwich work.
That's right.
Love it. Mm-hmm. That was really good and so helpful and empowering. I actually felt very empowered to be okay that and differentiation within relationships are good.
Yeah.
Like having that, again, that autonomy, that is so good. I was just talking about that in my last live, like trying to force me to assimilate into who Kevin is, I lose me.
That's
and
right.
You will become resentful of that as well. So that, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, you know, there's it's a fine balance between finding the we and the you and me, because you don't want a we that's so assimilated that you have no identity outside of the relationship. That is boring.
Yes.
And we don't like it. Like that creates a whole set of issues. It's stale. It's the same, you know, there's no creativity in that. But we also want certain things where we establish a we, because we are still a unit. And so there might be some things that this is how we do it.
This is how we think about things.
Absolutely. So it's a fine balance between having the autonomy and the individuality in the relationship, but also having an identity of we. And it's just a matter of, like, what are the things that we're kind of co-creating together and this is how we do it in our relationship versus these are the things that I do and they're maybe different from you. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Because we're different people.
Yeah, yeah.
Love that. And I also love the idea that it's a constant negotiation. Mm-hmm. One thing that we have tried to do and I've fought against it and now I'm like, this is why, and I didn't know. Kevin's like, just tell me what it's going to be. And I'm like, I don't want to because what works for me today, and that's just for anything. Like we were talking about sex at the time, but even with like going out, I can't simply say, give me 5 times that we're going to go out because depending on the day, I may not want to. Mm-hmm. So let's just always be willing to come to the table and have a negotiation, have that, again, that negotiation. So when we go out to the world, we're a united front.
It's temporary compromise. Because you're dealing with perpetual problems and things are not static.
Yes.
So how I show up today, I might be a lot more compromising today because I'm feeling like I'm in a good place. I'm well rested. I had some food. I'm good. And so I might be able to give a little bit more today and say, I'm going to flex a little bit more and, you know, kind of meet you in what you're asking for me. And other times it might be like, I'm just not there. Like, I just can't. So it's finding temporary compromise and then revisiting these conversations throughout the rest of the relationship. Yeah. Because it's not just like, this is how we'll do it for the rest of our lives. It's now we're going to do it this way. And then you use your State of the Unions to talk about how that's going. Do we need to make a change? Do we need to come up with a new compromise? Because maybe from lived experience, this isn't working the way we thought it was.
Yeah.
Love that. I just absolutely, and I love the idea of a temporary compromise. Oh, that was good.
It's trial and error. You want to see how it goes. A lot of like scientific method kind of like, here's what I think might work.
Yeah.
Let's try it out for a couple weeks and then let's come back together and see how it's going. And maybe we tweak or modify.
Love that. Love, love, love that. Okay. Did you have any other last things, Kevin? Dr. Lauren, I always like my guests to have the space to give us like any last tidbits or information or something maybe we didn't compromise that's like really important, something that you see that you would love to share.
You know, I think just overall message would be that so many of us do not receive great modeling around how to be in a healthy relationship. We didn't study it in school.
Nope.
So we're all kind of going in here without the tools and the knowledge to make it, you know, successful and work and healthy and happy. And so I kind of approach this like just anything else. Like if you didn't have the user manual or, you know, you didn't know how to do something, what would you do?
Yeah.
You would go research it. You would go study it. You would go like figure out how to make that successful.
Yeah.
So if you want to have a really happy and healthy relationship, go study it.
Yep.
Yeah. The Gottmans have books. They've got a fantastic blog and you can go to gottman.com and, you know, read just snippets of all the things that we just talked about today. And, you know, it just goes into a little bit more detail. You can attend a workshop. You can, the Gottmans have an app that you can download to your phone. Like, you know, just go and find the information. And as you immerse yourself more and more in some of this research and some of the tools and techniques and you practice it, you're going to see the difference that that makes. And so I really recommend just, you know, if you find that some of the stuff here is useful to you, go continue the journey and read more about it, learn more about it, practice more of this.
Yeah.
And it will become more and more intuitive over time.
Love that. Love, love, love that. Last thing, you guys know, you guys are always support my guests on Instagram. So if you are interested, Dr. Lauren has tons of really great, like her Instagram grid is filled with like, you should stop and read. If it shows up in your algorithm, stop and read all the things because it's really great. So can you share with people your Instagram information? And then are you sharing the book?
Oh, I'm okay talking
okay,
about
good.
I mean,
Chad, I wasn't sure. I
it's was like, in oh, process.
Okay. It's and then you can talk about your book and we'll bring you back on. I know. Yeah, I didn't know if we needed to cut that. So
no,
I wasn't sure.
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. So I am most active on Instagram. So that's at Lauren Fogel, Dr. Lauren Fogel Mercy.
Yeah, there's a doctor.
The doctor on there.
There it's there. So Dr. Lauren Fogel Mercy on Instagram. And I also have a Facebook that I link to the Instagram. So you get all that there. And then currently in process of writing a book with a friend of mine about libido. And sort of similar to Dr. Emily Nagoski's work, this is going to be something that's for all people. So not just for women readers, but for anybody who's kind of struggling with either low libido, or if your partner has lower libido than you, or, you know, you're struggling in that relationship dynamic. It's going to have exercises and worksheets and things to help navigate that. So that is in the works, in process right now.
And when that's done, child, she's going to be in our, I have a book club, and we will be reading that book. Yeah. So when that comes out, just already know that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's it. In the meantime, I would just like to say thank you so much
for
joining us today and sharing with us all things Gottman. I learned a ton of information. I hope that you did too. Please make sure that you signed up for the Love Hour Conference. We are in 2020. We are like... it's tomorrow, okay? Not literally, but like it's close. So please make sure that you sign up. I did, you know what the, I'm going to just say this really quickly. The saddest thing about hosting a conference and doing it like more than a year out is that lives change. And so some of the good news that happens is that people get pregnant and they're like, I'm due like right around the conference. Please, what can I do? And then there are people that get divorced. And I have gotten a handful of requests for refunds because they are no longer together. I just got one yesterday or the day before.
And you got to still come. Obviously, it didn't work out. Come to the conference the next time. Ain't no refunds, baby boy.
Yeah.
Y'all better hold out till July 11th.
That actually, I say that because it actually breaks my heart because you realize that.
Breaks my wallet. That figure it out.
That people, at the end of the day, people are
she's
still living.
An
yeah, I am having an emotion. Thank you, Dr.
I'm having
Lord.
A financial emotion, but you're right, Dr. Lord.
That people are, you know, they're living lives, and they obviously probably signed up for the conference because they see that they need that type of help. So it just breaks my heart that I have literally received those. But that does mean that their tickets are available. So I do have, like, a couple vow renewal VIP tickets available. What?
All that being said, some VIP spots are now available.
They are available because, I mean, you can't, you know, what are you going to do? So
can't
I say
renew
all
vows or you broke them.
Right. So I say all that to say go to thelovehour.com where you can see information about the Love Hour Conference. And Kevin's hosting his conference, the Creator Conference, in October. And if you would like to attend both, we will in September, if you would like to attend both, we will have deals available for you as well. I think that's it. That's all. Until the next time. Bye.
Bye.